second call in the second series of telecourses for leadership. I'm Dave Ellis. There are people on the call from all across the United States and Canada. And before I put you all on mute, I'd just like to hear from a few more of you. Say your first and last name and where you're calling from.
Sharon Hudson, Runyon City.
Thank you, Sharon.
Ray Sharlin, Santa Cruz.
Hi, Ray. Thank you.
Julie Dresser.
Thanks, Julie.
Judy Carter, Vancouver, BC, Canada. Hi, Dave.
Thank you, Julie. Wow.
Suzanne Runyon, Vancouver, Washington.
Thanks, Suzanne. Many of you I know and some of you I don't, and I'm going to put you now all on mute. Now, you're muted, but I want to hear from you. I have before me on my computer a list of all of the people that are on the call right now. All of your phone numbers are listed here. And on my desk, I have a list of all the people that have signed up for the call and your phone numbers. So I know who you are, I know how long you stay on the call, and most importantly, I know when you want to say something. So if you would like to say something any time during this call, just hit *61 on your phone. And within a minute or two on my computer, you show up with a little hand next to your number. And then I know that you'd like to say something. You'd like to make a comment or you'd like to ask a question. In which case, what I'll do is I'll finish whatever I'm saying and I'll hit that little phone. And on your phone, you will hear that you've been unmuted. Now, as soon as you've been unmuted, just say your name and maybe where you're calling from so we get that we're coming from all across the United States and Canada. And we actually have a few participants from Korea, France, and I think one man from China. So we're all around the world and mostly around the United States and Canada. So anytime you'd like to make a comment, I really do want this to be an interactive call. As I mentioned, we are recording this call for the people that can't attend. And what I'd like is for you, whether you're listening to this live or whether you're listening to the recording, please have this be an interactive call with something for you to look at. Because I know most of you learn best when you don't just listen to what's going on, but you see what's going on. And the way you make that happen is by taking notes. Now, even if you never plan to look at those notes again, please find something to write on now and something to write with. And when there's an idea that comes to mind, maybe an idea I'm talking about or maybe something that somebody else brought up, please write down a note about it or draw a picture of it or write down a word that reminds you of it. Also, several times during this call, I'm going to ask you to write down something. And I do that so that the quality of our interaction goes up and so that you have time to invent. Because that's really why I've called you together here for our hour, is for you to invent. And that's our purpose. And in particular, what I want you to do is invent ways that you can be more effective as a leader. Now, as I mentioned to you on the first call, and I mentioned to many of you on the first series of calls that took place in April and May, I believe that you are all leaders. And I believe that you're leaders in many different domains, some of which you may not even realize you're a leader. I believe that a leader is anyone who wants something bad enough that they're willing to ask others to also want it. So many of you are a leader in your relationships. Many of you are a leader in your family. I'm talking, first of all, about your primary relationship. If you have a lover, a spouse, a best friend even, you lead in that domain when you want something bad enough to ask the other person to either help you get it or to also want it. Some of you lead at work. You have formal leadership positions. But whether you have a formal leadership position or not, I claim that you're a leader when, in your work setting, you want something bad enough to ask others to want it, and you want it bad enough to ask people to put time, energy, or money behind creating it. In those ways, I believe that you're a leader. The purpose of this call and and the purpose of this series of calls is to assist you to improve your leadership. And improve your leadership dramatically by my presenting my best ideas about leadership. But more importantly, by asking you to invent new leadership practices, new habits, behaviors, methods, strategies that you'll take into your work or into your community or into your political process or into your family or into your relationships, new ideas, new practices that you will implement. So that's where I think the real power of this call comes from, is when you invent what you're going to use. Maybe it's based on some idea I have. Maybe it's based on the opposite of some idea I have. But you invent, and then you commit to it, you put it into action, and you are more effective as a leader. Now, particularly in this series of calls, the series of four calls, and this is the second one, we're talking about leaders and their ability to vision far out into the future, and then create detailed action plans, detailed plans to manifest those visions, while maintaining a great work-life balance so they don't get out of whack, so you don't get out of whack, and by using coaching skills in your leadership. Those are the four topics that I want to focus in most specifically. These are also the topics that I bring to the leadership trainings. I mentioned to many of you on the last call, I conduct 3-day-long leadership trainings. I just had one in June. We're going to have another one in October. I mentioned that we were going to have one in August, but it just doesn't look like we're not going to do that. It's too close to our other trainings. It's just not a good time to gather people away from their summer vacation. So we're not going to do the one in August that I told you about, but we are going to do the training in October. And I'd just love to have about 50 of you join me, because it's in those 1-day or those 3-day trainings that the invention part of what I'm asking you to do is really put into practice. Because it's then where I give you the time and the space, where more importantly, you give yourself the time and the space to really create newly, to create new practices, new ideas, new habits that you'll bring into your life in every aspect of your life, so that you can lead yourself and so that you can lead those around you to the life that you want, the life that we all want. So that's where we're headed. On the first call of this series, I talked about creating compelling visions as a leader. And I mentioned that I believe that's your primary role. Now, what I want to do for a few minutes here is I want to just very briefly say again what I said on that call 2 weeks ago. And then I'm going to stop, have you do a little writing, and take a few comments or questions about that. So these next few minutes will be a little review from that first call. And then I'm going to talk about, for the bulk of this call, and have you interact with me about, once you've created that compelling vision, once you have some clarity about where it is that you want to take this group that you're leading. And again, it might just be a group of one other. It might even just be a group of one. Because I believe that you are your best leader. And you can become your best leader. The point is, once you've created that compelling vision, the next step is to go into the planning process. So I'm going to explain what I believe is a great planning process and then talk and interact with you about it. So that's where we're headed for the call. We'll be done at the top of the hour. That's in, by my watch, 50 minutes from now. So thanks very much for joining, whether you're joining live or whether you are joining this recording. Now, if you're listening to the recording, of course, you can't raise your hand electronically. But if you're right here live, you can. But if you're listening to the recording, please still interact with me. I'm very accessible by email, dave@daveellisleadership.com. dave@daveellisleadership.com. Again, if you are live on this call, don't forget to electronically raise your hand. I notice that no one has done that yet. No problem, of course. But I'd love to hear from you. So anytime that you want to speak, just raise your hand. And Somebody's actually done that, so let's test the system here. And remember, once I call on you and you hear you're unmuted, you just say your first and last name and where you're calling from, and then say whatever you want to say.
John Staub in Chicago.
Hi, John.
Hey, Dave, I'm wondering, how can I access last week's? I thought tonight's was the first session, so I missed last week.
On Friday, when I sent out a reminder, which I intended to do for everybody that had been signed up, on the bottom of that reminder was the instructions on how to subscribe to the podcast. And I think we've worked out those instructions now, they're relatively easy. But if, John, if you didn't get those instructions, or if any of you are missing those instructions, just email me, dave@daveellisleadership.com, and I'll send them to you again.
Thank
I want
you.
To remind you, you're welcome, John. And once you've raised your hand, John, I'll hit that little hand again, and that puts you back on mute. I want to remind you all that the way you raise your hand is you hit *61 on your telephone. Now, let's just say you raised your hand because you had something you wanted to say, but then somebody else said it, or you had a question to ask, somebody else asked it, so you're done. Well, you can lower your hand by hitting *61. What I'd like to do now is call on one more person, and then, they disappeared from the screen. I want to talk about visioning. A very quick review, and then I want to hear your comments. And the review is to tell you that from my point of view, visioning is the primary role of a leader. Whether you're leading your family or your community, your company, your nonprofit organization, or yourself, I think the first thing to do is to create a compelling vision. A vision that gets you up in the morning. A vision that gets the group up in the morning. A vision that is motivating because it's a huge motive. A vision that brings tears to your eyes and a bounce to your step and a gleam. A smile to your face and warm in your heart. That's the kind of vision. So you create a compelling vision by committing to it, first of all. Because nobody creates it just out of nothing. We create it by saying we will. We set aside the time to do it. You set aside the energy to do it. You find a partner to help you do it. That's what I was recommending. And then you really stretch your creativity. You go out as far as possible in terms of time. We talked last time about 5 years and 10 years. You look 50 years out. But that's way insufficient to the world in which we live. I claim that it's really compelling when you present a vision that will take 100 years. The kind of vision that the suffragettes imagined, the kind of vision that Martin Luther King imagined, the kind of vision that will take us a long time to achieve, maybe even 500 years or 1,000 years out. And you create that vision in every area of life with great detail, but you hold it all as a draft. And you don't worry about why you have that vision. The why is because you want it. It's because you want it, and because you want it, I claim it's good for you and the people around you. And you don't ask how to achieve that. That's what we're going to look at in a few minutes. But in the beginning, when you're creating the vision, you just look at what and where and when and with whom. And you know that you can change it. It's a ever-evolving vision. It's not carved in stone, but rather it's written lightly in the sky for you to look toward the horizon and for it to lift your eyes way out. And that what will put a bounce in your step. So that's the quick review of our last call. And now before I call on a few of you to take your questions or comments, I want you all to write down something. Either write down part of what I just said if you haven't, or write down a comment about what I just said, or write down a question about this whole concept of leaders creating compelling visions. I'm going to be quiet for 30 seconds because I want you to have the space to write and the space to think. So whether you're listening to the recording or you're listening right now live, please take the space and write something, because what you write, I claim, will be far more valuable than what I say. 30 seconds. Begin writing now. All right. Got two different people who want to say something, and I'm looking forward to hearing what it is that you have to say. So as soon as you're off mute, say your first and last name and where you're calling from.
I think my line is unmuted. This is Jade calling.
Hi,
from
Jade.
Hawaii.
Hi, Jade. Thanks for calling in.
Hi.
And go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I just first want to say it's just really exciting to be on the call, and so I'm really grateful for that. And I just really appreciated the first few comments you made about visioning, you know, just being a source of inspiration is what I heard, that it really makes your heart sing. And I just noticed hearing those words was also, for me, it just created this kind of physical, biological response of, so I just want to express that for me, too. It's like it's accurate when also my body somehow says yes to it. So
yeah.
It's not just my mind, but also that somehow there's a resonance, you know, in terms of a very experiential way. So I just wanted to add that to the whole mix.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay. That's really exactly what I'm talking about here, is to be a source of inspiration. And to be a source of inspiration is to first be inspired. Be so inspired that it shows up in your body. It shows up in how you walk up steps. It shows in how you stand and how you look and how you hold your face. It shows up in how you feel inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I claim that you will be a source of inspiration when you're inspired by that way. And I say that you'll be inspired that way when you follow your own desire. And that's the kind
yeah.
of leadership that I'm talking about, is leadership by desire.
Mm. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Jade. I'd like somebody else to raise their hand. I'd like to hear from a few more of you before we go into, now that we've got these visions, these compelling visions, what do we do to manifest them? So I'd like to hear from a couple more of you. Please raise your hand by hitting *61. Again, what I want to hear from you is, what do you think about what I've said so far? And even if you didn't hear that first call, go ahead, as soon as you're unmuted, say your first and last name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Dave. It's Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn.
I have a couple of clients where this really comes to mind, and one of them in particular is a person who's responsible for carving out a very important and vigorous program in a highly competitive and complex organization. And she actually says things to me like, I just hate that visioning stuff. And she's much more about execution as the organization is. And I really believe in what you're saying. And so my question to you and what I'd like you to comment on is, how can I bring modeling of my own visioning to help demonstrate to her how she can vision, because she's having difficulty with that.
Yeah, thanks, Carolyn. I think that your question has a wonderful answer in it, because your question started off to be, well, how can you get her to vision? And then you said, really, well, what can you do to demonstrate visioning so that she'll vision? And so I first of all, love your answer, which is that you demonstrate that you've done it. And the way to demonstrate that you've done it, of course, is to first of all do it. So I claim that all of you on this call, if you want to assist other people to vision, you vision. And you start to share your visions, your dreams, your hopes, your wishes. And when you do that, it becomes contagious. So Carolyn, first of all, great, great idea, and that is that you do the visioning and then you share your visions. Now, I also think is to give her the option to not vision, because maybe she doesn't want to be a leader. Maybe what really she wants to do is be a manager or an implementer, because a lot of people do. That's the role they want to play in their workspace, and that's what you said. She's responsible for a really big program and a complex organization, and maybe she's just where she wants to be, which is that somebody else gave her the program, essentially the marching orders, and she implements them. And maybe that's what she wants. That's the comfortable place she wants to be, and not comfortable like bad, comfortable like that's the spot that she resides. Now, maybe, though, she says, but I do want to learn a little bit about visioning. The spot to start might not be with that complex organization. The spot to start might be just in her own personal life or in her family life. Or maybe she goes to church in her church life. Or maybe she's interested in politics in some little political arena. So is to take this visioning process and have it be done in something smaller than this huge complex organization. So she gets familiar with the process and then see if really she wants to bring that to the organization. If not, no problem. She's a great manager and I wouldn't call her a leader.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Carolyn. I'd like to call on somebody else. Just say your first and last name. Go ahead.
Peter Chandonnet from New York, or from San Francisco.
Hi, Peter. It sounds like maybe your vision includes moving to New York.
I could very well, Dave. What I love about hearing, you know, the long-term visioning is allowing your vision to change. So you throw out a vision, maybe 5, 10, 15 years. I think I may have commented on the last call, and you mentioned it again on this call. And then as you move yourself forward and you have your experiences and you attain your goals, things change as you've reached a goal, and what you thought was perhaps the next goal may be somewhat different based on the goal you just achieved, but it still may match up to that long-term vision, but just be slightly different. So I like the idea of being having that malleableness or that flow that you speak of, or I interpreted what you said as that.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter. And what I like is the analogy of walking through the woods, and through the woods that kind of like look like Tahoe, for those of you in California, or for the Black Hills of South Dakota where I grew up, or, you know, these woods where you go up a hill and then down through a valley and then up a hill, and from wherever I'm standing, I can create a particular vision of where I want to go toward. But then after hiking for a while, I get to a new place, either a new valley where I see things that I hadn't seen, or a new hilltop where I see hills that I haven't seen, and even valleys that I hadn't seen. So from that new place, of course, I get to create a new vision. And I certainly don't want to be constrained by or feel boxed in by my old vision. The old vision was there to get me to this new place, to get me to a spot where I can now look out and generate another vision. Thanks, Peter. I want to hear from one more person, and then I want to talk about the specific planning process once you've gotten the vision. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave, this is Susan Hayward.
Go ahead, Susan.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Absolutely.
I love what you're saying, and I retired from an organization where everything was very much into execution, and I am changing. I can feel myself changing and moving into a leadership position in some less execution-type situations, like with family and church and extended family. And the part where you say to make the time to do the visioning, do you have any helpful suggestions for that transition time to help someone change from being so much a doer and meeting deadlines to feeling good about taking the time to vision? Because sometimes it feels like I'm wasting time. I know in my head I'm not, but it's a feeling. Because there's, you know, and I love trying to vision, but there's nothing to show for it sometimes.
Right.
So,
right. Thank you.
How do I be patient with myself, I guess?
Well, is you be patient with yourself. And, of course, the way you be patient with yourself is you commit to it. And I hear that's what you've got is your commitment. And that's the way you set aside time, is you commit to setting aside the time. And then literally just pull out your calendar and block it in. just like some of you block in time for exercise. Some of you block in time for dates with your spouse. Some of you block in times for vacations. Some of you block in times for meetings with your staff. So you block in times called visioning. And then you do that. You have a lot of those times be where you do it alone, and then you have some of those times be where you do it with a coach or a committed listener, someone who will really just have no agenda but assisting you to vision. And then you block in times where you have the people in your planning group, the people that you care about, and those are times also. So you set aside those times, and then during each of those times, you take notes. Take notes either on 3x5 cards like I've described in the book Creating Your Future and in the book Falling Awake, or you create notes on an outline like I described in our last leadership training, a collapsible outline like you could find in Microsoft Word or a lot of other programs. But the reason to take those notes is so that you leave with a product. Because so many of you, and Susan, you just confessed to this too, you know, it feels like you haven't created anything. But there's a part of you that wants to see the tangible results of visioning. And for me, that's the reason to take notes.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Now, I realize that we haven't finalized your vision, but we talked about it on the first call 2 weeks ago, and we talked about it again today. So that's the first step is to create not a final vision, because as Peter mentioned, the power is never to have it finalized, but to create as much detail as possible, as far out as you can, in every area of your organization and your life, without questioning why, sticking with what, when, where, and with whom, and then you go to the next step, which is you start to develop the solution or the ways to achieve the hows, or the means to achieve the end. So this distinction between the vision and the detailed plan is really a blurry one. It's not like it's clear, because one person's vision is a piece of somebody else's plan. So, for example, the vision might be to create an organization that serves 1,000 people a day. That might be somebody's vision. But for somebody else, that's just a piece of a plan on the road to ending world hunger. Or that might just be a piece of the plan on the path to eliminating AIDS as a major health problem in the world. So, again, that distinction between the vision and the plan is a bit blurry. So I want to use some other lexicon here, some other words. We've got the vision is the big piece, and then we're going to break it down into smaller and smaller visions, and finally into smaller and smaller pieces, which become plans. So another way to talk about that is the vision is the problem to solve, and we're going to talk about the problem in smaller and smaller pieces, and then eventually those smaller pieces of the problem become solutions. So like a vision is blurred down into plans, the problem gets blurred down into solutions. Another way to talk about this is the vision is the what we want to achieve, and the plan is the how to achieve it. One more, and I'll give you some examples, is the vision is the end result, and then the plans are the means to the end. But of course, again, every means eventually becomes an end. The point is, once you get that vision, then you start creating these solutions or the means. And the way to do that is to take apart the vision and ask, what are the many ways I'm going to achieve it? Another way to say this is you take the problem and you say, what are the many solutions I'm going to come up with to reach it? Another way to say that is, I'm going to pick the end result and what are the many different means I'm going to choose to get there. The point is, whether you talk about this as problems and solutions or visions and plans or means to an end, you generate a whole lot of them. You generate literally dozens and dozens of ways that you will use to achieve the vision that you see. Here's a couple of quick tips about how to do that. One is to generate a tree diagram that looks upside down. So the root of the tree, you can draw this if you would. It looks like an organizational chart. Okay, the first circle or box at the top of the organizational chart is your vision. And then you draw a little line like an organizational chart would have, and you might have under that four or five other boxes, or six or seven, and those are what we might call subvisions. Or they could also be seen as ways to achieve that end. But now, under each one of those, draw another little organizational chart-like looking structure, and you will generate the next level of ways to achieve that end. And then you go to that level, and each one of those becomes an end that you want to generate ways to achieve it. So you're developing this hierarchical structure of all the different solutions to a problem, or all of the different detailed plans to bring a vision into place. And on every level, you consider that the new vision, and the next level down are the plans to how to achieve it. And then you go down to that level, and those plans become your vision, and the next level down are your ways in which you're going to achieve that. One of the ways to do this is to just keep asking yourself, how? I know I mentioned on the call 2 weeks ago to postpone how, to not ask how. Well, that's right. But until now, this is when you postpone it until. Once you've then got clear about your vision, then you start asking, how do I achieve that? And then how else? And then how else? Now, the problem with how is a lot of people stop after they come up with about one good answer. Oh, please don't do that. Generate 10, 20, 30 good answers. And then every one of those good answers, or those solutions to the problem, or means to the end, becomes another place where you ask the same question, which is, well, how do I do that? I want to give a few concrete examples. Let's say you're writing a book, and your vision is to write a book that will take your expertise and share it with others, because you all have some particular expertise, and a few of you want to write a book. If you don't want to write a book, just stay tuned. I'll give you another example in a minute, but at least you can imagine writing a book. So the vision, or the top part of that organizational chart, is writing the book. And then the next level down, you say, well, what are the ways, what do I have to do, how will I write the book? Let's see. The first one is I'll go out and do the research. The second one is I'll produce a draft. The next one is, well, I might find a publisher. The next one is I'll get my draft edited. The next one is, well, maybe I'll even do some publicity about it. Who knows? But you come up with the first 5 to 7 good answers for how you'd write a book. But don't stop there. Generate more. And when you're stuck, then go to each one of those answers you just generated and ask, how again? So, for example, I said the first thing you might do is you said research the book. So you'd ask yourself, well, how do I research the book? Well, you'd start your list. Well, I'll go on the internet. I'll interview people. I'll talk to other experts. I'll read other books on the subject. I'll go out and do some field testing. And then you run out of answers for a while. So then you go to the next question. Remember when I said how to write the book, I said do the first draft. So he said, well, how am I going to do the first draft? And you say, well, I'll take a bunch of notes, and I'll throw them out on the floor, and then I'll put them in my computer, and I'll put them in an outlining, I mean, whatever comes to mind. So see, what you're doing is you're building this chart with more and more detail. I think you got the point here, but I'm going to give you two more examples quickly. Building a house. That's at the top of the chart. You ask yourself, how do I build a house? Well, you think to yourself, well, I got to first of all design the house. Then you think, well, what do I got to do? Then I got to find the land. And then how else do I build a house? Well, I got to find a builder. And how else do I? Well, I got to determine the materials. Well, how else? You keep asking. But then when you run out of answers, you go back to each one of those answers and you ask how again. For example, one of the answers that I gave a minute ago was design the house. So then you ask yourself, well, how do I design the house? You come up with those answers. Well, let's see. I hire an architect. I design it myself on the back of an envelope. I ask the people who are going to live there with me how what they want. I write a bunch of ideas down. So there's that example. And you can use that. A lot of you are overloaded. You have too much work to do. So the problem or the vision is a life of work-life balance, not too much work to do. So that begins to be, again, the very top vision. And you ask yourself, how do I do that? You come up with all the answers you can think of. And then when you get stuck and you get done, can't think of any more, then you go back and ask how you do each one of those answers. In a minute, I want to hear from you about my idea here, but I want to give you the rest of the planning process because, of course, the first step is to detail your vision. The second step is to generate lots and lots of solutions or ways to achieve your vision. That's what we just talked about. And the third step is to prioritize those ways, to prioritize those hows, or if you want to call them solutions, and literally prioritize them like A, B, and C. You write down the ones that you really like. And those other ones, you maybe, a few of them are so crazy you throw them away, but some of them you maybe make as a B priority or a C priority. And if you don't like to use A, B, and C, you can use a number system, but the point is you prioritize. Next step is once you prioritize, then you start actually timing out the ways. You put them into a timeline. Which ones do I need to do by when? What's the critical path? This is that whole, a lot of you studied this in college, critical path analysis, critical path management, which sounds complicated. And when I learned about this in college and did it on the computer, boy, they make it complicated. But it doesn't need to be. It really is as simple as making a chart of what needs to be done before what else. So you take those A priority solutions, are those A priority means to the end, and you put them in time. Now, don't time them until you prioritize them, or what will happen is you'll be spending your time working on something that's not very important. It just became critical, but that was only because you said it would be. So be sure and not time things. Don't put them in your calendar until you know their priority. And then only time the A priorities. The next step, after you've detailed your vision, you've generated solutions, you've prioritized, and you've timed them, then you go implement. This is kind of the action stage. This is the doing stage. This is when you're out there taking all those wonderful ideas, those ideas that are a little hard to know whether it's the vision or the plan, a little hard to know whether it's the problem or solution, a little hard to know whether it's the means or the end, but you do know that you want to accomplish it. You've prioritized, you've timed them out, now go implement. Then the next step is evaluation. Now, of course, these steps all overlap. You're not going to implement everything before you evaluate, but that's the next step. Once you've gone into the implementation stage, then you go to evaluation, which is that looking to see how's this working. Is this moving me in my heart's desire? Is this moving me along the path that I really want to go? That links you back to the beginning. You look at your vision again. You generate solutions again. You prioritize once more. You time them out once more. You go to implement them again and immediately again evaluate. As soon as you've evaluated, you go back and you update your vision. You generate some more solutions. You prioritize those solutions. You put them into time, and then you get into action. You implement, and then you evaluate. And then you go back. How long am I going to do this, you wonder? Am I going to actually repeat this one more time? Yes, I am, because I'm hoping that you've all written this down and that you can see yourself, you can visualize yourself going through this process of visioning, generating solutions, prioritizing the solutions, putting them into time, then and only then implementing them. And very soon after you implement them, evaluating. So you can go back and vision, generate solutions, prioritize time, implement, and evaluate again. I'd like to hear from you. Before I hear from you, though, I'd like you to write. The reason is that what you say after you write will be much higher quality. And more important than that, this way you all get to outflow. So this time I'd like you to write for 45 seconds. What I'm asking you to write is something you've never written. I don't know what that is. I want you to come up with some new practice that you're willing to put into the world, or some new commitment, or some question that's really going to help you understand this more effectively. Or maybe it'll help other people. Or a comment. I'll be quiet now for 45 seconds while all of you write. I'd like several of you to raise your hand. This is so much more interesting when you talk back. So please hit *61 on your phone. You can comment on what I've said, or you can ask a question about what I've said. You can ask for another example. You can say you've tried this and it doesn't work at all. Tried this and it really worked. If you're unmuted, please speak your name and where you're calling from, and then just talk.
This is Pam Berglum.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, Dave. I love this idea. I'm a visual learner, and I, as you were talking about creating solutions and prioritizing, the boxes were popping up in my mind. And what I love about this idea and what I'm willing to commit to on this is I can see and I want to be able to work further down the line on some of them and allow some of them to not get further down the line. In other words, I will still be able to see progress on my long-term goal without having to have all of that first tier solved. So I think that idea.
Yeah. Good, Pam. Because what I like is when that first tier might have, let's say, 7 decent solutions to it, decent ways to achieve that top tier. Some of those I want to divide into another 7 ways to achieve that. But a few of those I don't need to divide them again because they're just obvious. And then some of them, I want to go to a 3rd or 4th or 5th tier to really put a lot of detail down into the plan. For example, the last house I built, it was a retreat center, but it looked like a house. One of the top level ways that I wanted to achieve the vision was to build it with love. To build it with people who wanted to be there. Now, I didn't really have to put much more detail to that because to me it was just obvious it was happening or not happening. But then another one of my top levels was to have a building that really served the environment. Well, I had to break that one down into many, many, many levels in order to make sure that we were using proper solar gain and make sure we were using proper earth banking and make sure that the water was right and the sewer system was sustainable. And so, yes, way to go, Pam. Somebody else, please say your name and whatever it is that you'd like to say. person from 519, I might have accidentally cut you off. If I accidentally cut you off, please raise your hand again.
Hello, this is Beth Ryan.
Hi, Beth. Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. I don't know how to work my phone, and I put you on hold at the moment when you unmuted me. I have the question, how do you, steps one and two are seem so leader-like, and then as you move into three, four, and five, they begin to sound like managers. And if a leader is somebody who's bringing people along with them, I'd like just to hear your thoughts on what's different between the leader and manager in approaching these steps, and how do you relate with other people and as you're doing that?
Well, I think you want to be with your team in most of these steps. I think it's great to start your visioning process alone. I mentioned this on the first call. I think a leader comes with a vision. Maybe he got some help from people that didn't have an agenda, but really does come with a vision. But then involves the group in detailing that vision. Certainly involves the group in creating, generating solutions. And in prioritizing, and in timing, and of course in implementing and evaluating. I think that what a manager does is takes over at the implementation stage to ensure that the solutions generated or the ways that were generated and the priorities that were set by the leader with the group and the timing set by the leader with the group. Then the manager comes in ensuring that the implementation occurs. So there might be a lot of managers in that implementation stage, of course, and you as a leader are watching that implementation occur. And then you as a leader are involved with the evaluation and then going back to the visioning. So I from my point of view, the leader's involved with all of these, and the managers really get involved in the implementation. Now, I think a good leader listens to his managers or her managers. A good leader listens to everyone in the group that he wants or she wants to lead. But I think that although you listen to those people, I'm not a fan of having that listening be in the way that's consensus. You know, I know that a lot of you may like the whole concept of consensus. I don't think that's leading. I think consensus is a lot like the politician who constantly surveys the population to see where he can stand and look like a leader because he's saying what everybody wants. Just like there are leaders in business who create a brand new product that fulfills a need that other people hadn't seen. Then there are people in business who are constantly surveying what does the public want. Now again, this is a continuum, and I'm not saying you don't survey what the public wants. I'm just saying I don't think the consensus is the way to determine the vision. Input, absolutely. You get a lot of input from everybody to help you determine the vision. Solutions, for sure. You get a lot of input, but I would never vote on solutions. As a leader, I think when you ask people to vote on solutions, you take the responsibility away from yourself and you give them to others. And I think as the leader, you choose the highest priority solutions and the timing based on your biggest picture view. But, of course, that's just my opinion, Beth, and I throw it out there to see if you can come up with one that's even better than that opinion and then, you know, implement something that makes sense.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. I think there's somebody else that has taken themselves, that's off of mute. Somebody else want to make a comment or a question? Yes.
This is Cliff.
Go ahead,
Dave,
Cliff.
One of the things that always stumps me on visioning is it sometimes I think I'm just a dullard and I don't have a vision, but really what it comes down to is I have lots of visions. And so it's the kind of choosing, making the commitment to a particular vision or I mean, you can, you know, in your life, I mean, whether it be your personal life or business life or wherever. And so I guess I'd like to hear your comments about, you know, I've got a long list of things here that I can envision myself doing in retirement. But it's that choice factor that I don't hear much conversation about whenever, you know, I read about this topic.
Yeah, well, thanks, Cliff, because I actually have a really strong opinion about this, and that is that you choose what makes your heart sing. You choose what lights you up. Choose what gets you to bounce out of bed in the morning. Choose what puts a smile on your face. And I know that some people don't make choices like that. Some people say, well, I'm going to choose what's best for the world, or I'm going to choose what my religion tells me, or I'm going to choose based on my value system, or I'm going to choose based on what other people think would be the right choice. I'm going to choose based upon consensus or democracy. Well, I don't think that works well. When I see people choose based on all those other reasons, what I find is that they don't have any energy. They crawl out of bed in the morning reluctantly. They kind of walk through life slowly. They've just got no energy, no spark, no life. So I'm recommending for all of you is to make that long list of your visions, your hopes, your dreams, your wishes, however you want to call it, the problem that you want to solve, the ends that you want to produce. Make that long list. And then frequently, like many times a month, you go through it and you ask yourself, does this light me up? Am I excited about this? Do I want this? Do I really want this? Am I passionate about it? And if the answer is yes, choose that one. And if the answer is no, please choose something else. Now, people ask me, they say, but that seems so selfish, and besides, if everybody just went out and chose what they want, you know, would that be a good world? Well, I think so, because so far, with the thousands of people that I've worked with, tens of thousands of people, I mean, every time I hear people describe their passion, I always hear something that I'm convinced would be good for the world, would be good for the people around them, it would be good for their family. Now, some people, their passion is finding the biggest fish to catch in the ocean or in their little trout stream where they live. And some people's passion is painting a picture that most of us wouldn't even understand, but they love it. And other people's passion is working and giving their entire life to end hunger on the planet. And that's what I'm recommending as the way to choose.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Cliff. I'd like to hear from one more of you, and then I want to finish up our time together. Of course, our time together is designed to get you to think, so that's what I'm hoping you've done. Think about how you could create detailed plans to manifest your vision. That's really what we're focusing on. Now, what if your vision conflicts with the vision of the group you're leading? Yeah. What if your vision, because you're, let's say you, either you're the appointed leader or you've appointed yourself to be the leader, but what if your vision conflicts with the vision of the group you're leading? Congratulations. Really, congratulations. That means you're a leader. Otherwise, you're just following the group. So if you, I think you're, as a powerful, strong leader, you can count on it that your vision will conflict with the vision of many of the people in the group. So at that point, what your job is to do is to see if you can speak about your vision in a way that you can get other people to want what you want. If you can enroll people in your vision, if you can convert people to your vision, or if you can find, after some conversation, a new vision that's still your vision, it's your revised vision, and it's one that other people can line up with. Well, that's my question and my own don't answer, but now I'd like to hear from you. Say your first name and where you're calling from.
My name is Shirley, and I'm from calling from Waterloo. And
thanks,
I just wanted
Shirley.
To thank you. I just wanted to say that in the last few minutes you just talked about once again, but it sunk in differently tonight, that you know, to choose from what makes you sing or what makes your, you know, your soul bounce out of bed, that kind of thing, rather than what you value. And I'm not sure if you said it quite like that before, and that just sunk in completely differently, because for me, what I have the potential to do, how I have the potential to lead, and the values I have, there's almost sort of this obligation to lead in a particular way that, as you talked about, I realized, yeah, I'm one of those people that then, where the energy is drained out, but where is my heart singing? And I think it was just, thank you for the permission to differentiate between leading from a place of values, not to say that I won't be, but prioritizing what makes me sing, and then bringing the values sort of under the umbrella of that, as opposed to what are my values, and then what do I lead from there? If that makes sense. But that's
absolutely
what I think that was-
Shirley, and you know, it's a little tricky, because one of the main messages I've sent to people throughout the last 30 years of teaching is to live a life that's value-driven, that's value-based. You know, that's what I'm kind of I wrote a book called Human Being, and the whole purpose of the book was to get people to focus on who they're being rather than what they're doing or what they're having. So instead of being a human having, or instead of being a human doing, you really be a human being focused on your values. So
I read the book.
Shirley. I'm totally a champion of that concept. But at the same time, I'm saying that those values are there to light you up. And sometimes we grab a value and we hold on to it and it doesn't light us up. No, it's not working anymore. So I claim at that point, look to your passion. Look to your desire. And once in a while, I mean, values are just like visions, in my opinion. They're there to be examined, re-examined, and sometimes changed. In the beginning of my business, Shirley, and I realize I've cut you off here, but we're out of time, and thank you. That was, Shirley, I really appreciate that. I just wanted to say, in the beginning of when I started to teach, and in my first business, one of my values was complete candor. And that just lit me up. We practiced over and over again as a group. We did all these exercises to make certain that there was no thought unsaid, that there was no secret untold, that was our value, was complete candor. But after a while, complete candor became an obligation. And I love, Shirley, that you use that word. And it no longer lit us up. It no longer lit me up. It no longer lit the people around me up. And now it did for a while. But all of a sudden it was like, now there's something more important than candor. And it was love. It was non-antagonism. It was a gentle respect and admiration for each other. Which is, of course, we want to also bring along candor, and we want to be as open and authentic as possible, but at the same time, not have candor be king. And that's the same point that you were talking about, Shirley, is not to have some value that becomes so much of an obligation that it all of a sudden destroys the passion. Well, our time is about up, and I want to thank you for taking this time. I realize that there's 100 things you could do with your time this evening, and or whenever you're listening to this, and what you've chosen to do is to be with me. And most of you have chosen to stay the whole time, and I really appreciate that. And as I mentioned at the beginning of this call, I'd love to, if you like this, I'd love to be with you and spend 3 days in this conversation of leadership. If you think you might be interested in that, or if you want to know more, you can call Bill Rentz or Joanne Bangs. I've worked with both of them for a very long time, and they've been to all my trainings for the last 15 years. They know how these work. better than anyone. So if you're interested, please call Bill Rentz, 605-390-2343. Or call Joanne Bangs at 605. Joanne, I forgot your phone number.
390. Thanks, Dave. 390-2275.
Very good, Joanne. 605-390-2275. I call her all the time. Thank you all for joining this call. Thanks for listening to it. I look forward to talking to you in 2 weeks, and we'll be together again then. Good night.
Good night.